This is Gary Wakefield, and you're listening to Queer Life Stories. Our podcast is recorded in La Truita, home of the Palawa people. We acknowledge the traditional owners of country, their diversity, histories and knowledge, and their continuing connections to land and community. We also acknowledge LGBTIQA+ advocates, friends and allies whose courage and strengths have helped to make this a more just society for lesbian, gay, bisexual, gender diverse and intersex populations and their families.
My name's Lauren Watson and I am the L lesbian in LGBTQ+A, but it hasn't always been that way, I guess, so it's only a relatively recent life update that I've started to use the L. Yeah, so I grew up in country Tasmania in the Huon Valley. That's still where I am. Okay. From a young age, I guess, raised in the Mormon religion, or the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, as the church is known as. Yeah, youngest of four siblings, just loved a really simple country life. I always had chickens and, you know, pet lambs and just really liked the sort of simple things in life. And that's something that sort of hasn't changed much for me. Do I love living in the Huon Valley? So, yeah, and it was a pretty good childhood, you know. Obviously from quite a young age I knew I was different. I knew there was something different there that looking at my siblings or looking at people around me or, you know, what you see in as a woman or a female, yeah, I noticed differences in myself that obviously at that age you don't have the language for. Mm. And even if you did, it wasn't talked about.
Yeah.
So, and it was that thing of just knowing I was, not as girly as my sisters or my mum or liking stereotypical male boy things. And it wasn't even the case of wanting to be a boy. It was just that I knew that the boys had cooler toys.
Yeah.
Right? Or yeah, like yeah. Better clothes or sure. Like, you know, they could play sports. And because that was, you know, early 90s I'm talking about. So yeah. It's a hugely different world then that it is now, that, you know, gender is broken down a lot now in terms of, you know, sport, stereotypes, toys, clothes. It's not as big as an issue as it was when I was growing up, where things were very gendered.
Yeah.
And I just remember carrying around a lot of shame around having those desires and just knowing I was different and kind of not even wanting to tell my mum and dad, like, can I have a remote control car instead of a doll or something? Just yeah. Simple things like that. You think now, like, really?
Yeah.
Like, that was a thing. Whereas now you just kind of buy kids what they want, yeah. what they're interested in. But when I was growing up, there was a huge influence of gendered sort of things that I didn't seem to fit into. Mm. Yeah. I went to school at Huonville Primary School mostly. I was the youngest of four. I got on pretty well with my siblings. My older brother went off to the Navy when I was eight,
okay.
I think. But yeah, got on really well. Had a really nice sort of childhood. Went fishing with my dad. You know, he taught me how to fish and went on camping trips to Bruny Island a lot. And yeah, we just had a really
chill
sort of chill childhood. Obviously, in hindsight, there was a lot of developmental trauma in terms of not having the emotional support and feeling seen and to not being able to be authentic mm. as a kid, to hide yourself causes a lot of damage, I guess.
When did you first start to feel that?
Oh, like as a kid even? Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know what age. Younger than 10, definitely. It was that thing of like, I know I'm different, but I don't want to say anything or, yeah, and like I didn't have a, at that point, you're not, it's not really sexuality because you haven't really experienced attraction, real attraction at that point, but you just know that you're not like everyone else. Mm. And there was one point I remember playing with some cousins on the mainland when we were visiting. You know, my female cousins and my sisters were off painting their nails and everything, and I just went into the boys' cupboards and just like candy store kind of thing of, oh, there's like Transformers and remote control cars and all this cool stuff. And I just sat there by myself like for hours just kind of going like, this is kind of the stuff I want, you know. That's when I first really noticed like something's different.
When did you start to question it and say like, maybe I want something else?
I guess I was always that way. I was always more what you'd call in the 90s tomboy.
Yeah.
And that didn't end. That always carried through. I guess there were times where in religion, as a young adult, I'll get into that later, I guess, but when it became a huge more influence, that was sort of more pushed down and suppressed. But as a teenager, I was pretty confident in sort of having my own style, and I kind of got into like rock and punk music as well. So that in itself was sort of a different sort of style. And
sure.
Yeah, and even, like my mum and dad like knew that, yeah, you know, Lauren just likes t-shirts and shorts. Like that's definitely kind of her more style. And it's not like they didn't know that or acknowledge that. They definitely, you know, catered to my preferences at that age, I guess. It's just I felt really uncomfortable talking about it or shedding light on the differences at that point, I think. Yeah. Interestingly, there wasn't a lot of us churchies kind of at school. You were very few and far between. And I guess I got bullied more as a younger kid for being religious than I ever did, kind of feeling different in terms of not being feminine enough or anything. Yeah, but school was great. I had, you know, a group of friends and even at that point, like little boyfriends here and there because it's just what happened, it's what you did. Yeah, and then I guess growing up like with high school, that's when things started to shift a bit more when different influences come in and, you know, the religious aspect was still there, but that's when your authenticity and the religion starts to clash, like when you actually start going through puberty and realizing that you have certain desires and feelings and things that start stirring.
Yeah. Mm. Before that, was there ever any awareness of queer people?
The only kind of queerness that I was really sort of aware of was like mum and dad had all the K.D. Lang albums. Like they loved K.D. Lang, right? So, you know, I'd whenever she brought out a new album, mum and dad would get it. Just they love her music, right? And so that was, I guess, my first sort of conscious awareness of queerness. And, you know, she was very androgynous and pushed back a lot in terms of what was stereotypical for a woman in her day and age. And apart from that, not much.
Then when you got into high school and you started to have that, question those things and have and explore those sort of feelings, what was it like around then?
Lesbian was a dirty word.
Mm-hmm.
Gay was like just a lingo that young people would say, oh, that's gay. You know, in terms of lame or silly or stupid, oh, that's gay, right? That's the day and age that I, you know, grew up in, I suppose, early teenagers.
Mm.
You know, dyke, lesbian, it was very negative connotations. It was always used to put someone down or, you know, it was never used as like, oh, this person's a lesbian or if it's like, oh, they're a lesbian. Like you were in hushed tones,
sure,
you know. Yeah. It was never something that I was exposed to with positive light or like a celebratory kind of stance on it. It was always, yeah, like shameful or negative or something that you kind of didn't want to talk about.
When you started to question your feelings. How did you kind of reconcile? Like, how did you accept that? Like, how did you?
I didn't.
Okay.
It was extremely isolating. So, I guess when I was 14, I started putting some language to some feelings. I guess I thought, was I bisexual? Am I a leso? Literally, this is what I've got written down in journals that was going back through only a few weeks ago, because it starts for me anyway. It started off with like intense female friendships or intense idealization of female celebrities or sports stars or things like that, and you kind of start thinking, oh, I sound like a lesbian or I sound like I'm bisexual at the moment, but I'm not, you know, like it's. Those kind of things start coming up and then you go, oh, I don't want to sound like a lesbian, but this is what I'm feeling kind of thing as I'm writing stuff down. And the religious aspect as well was huge because I couldn't be, it wasn't an option to be gay in religion. Like it wasn't even something that, like if you thought those things, it's Satan influencing you and you've just got to push it down and overcome those feelings by doing better things like praying more or reading the scriptures more or, you know, pretty much pretending they don't exist. And so that was my life for pretty much most of my teenage years. And I also had a girlfriend when I was 16. So there was that in the mix, like, acting on those feelings and also still having so much guilt and shame, secrecy about what was going on, not being able to tell anyone, not even telling my parents, siblings, all in secrecy, all in shrouded in shame and self-loathing and all of that nice stuff.
Did that come with some depression, anxiety?
Oh, huge. I already, I guess, was predisposed to mental health struggles, I guess, from a younger age. I think my personality type and family history as well, it wasn't a good combination. And with religion and then, you know, sexuality issues on top of that, confusion, it just was a perfect cocktail for poor mental health, I think. Even I think when I was 15 or 16, that was when my first bout of depression started, and I literally took myself to the GP and started antidepressants before, like, my parents didn't even know. So, you know, that's that's kind of the relationship I had with them, I guess, at that point. And with the relationship I formed with my first girlfriend then, it was, she also suffered from poor mental health as well, and it was an interesting journey at that point, but it was not something I'd like to do again. I'd obviously do things differently if I could, but you can only do what you can at the time. Yeah.
Was she part of the church as well, or?
She was a part of a different church.
Okay.
So we both had religious influences. I was far more devout, I guess, and into it more than she was in her religion. Or church that she would sort of attend, and I carried far more guilt and I ended up ending things because of just, I couldn't carry around the guilt and shame of, you know, Jesus knows everything kind of thing and eternal consequences. Like in the Mormon religion, the afterlife is hugely, like, a huge focus, especially families. Like if you're not going to obey the commandments, you can pretty much be cut off from your family for eternity. And you've got to, you know, have a really, the commandments are very, very strict and black and white. There's not a lot of room for personal interpretation of commandments. So, it wasn't a pleasant experience.
So I guess you didn't have any other out family members or?
Second cousin in Melbourne who, you know, and remember this was the mid-90s. And he's, you know, he's now like out and proud, and he's even worked at Joy FM, the radio station in Melbourne, and But there were inklings that he might have been gay, you know, growing up. But that was...
Was that discussed? Did you hear people talking about that?
Yeah, maybe like mum and dad, but they were quite respectful of it. Like, okay. It wasn't a hugely big deal. It was like, I reckon he's gay, or, you know, something like that. And, you know, mum and dad as well, like, dad wasn't a part of the religion and my mum was a convert. So I guess I got lucky. It could have been a lot worse. I really feel for queer kids who are in multi-generational Mormon families or multi-generational Christian families, where the culture of the family is the religion. Whereas my family experience was a little bit different because, you know, dad didn't attend church and mum was sort of a bit more liberal and a bit more progressive, I guess, being a convert. That relationship went off and on for like years in secret. It was that thing of that pull and draw of just knowing that. I think what made it more intense was kind of knowing that it was Satan's kind of, it was a temptation, and that made it more of a temptation, maybe. But yeah, that went off and on until I was 18, 19. It started at 16. Yeah. So, and, you know, in between that, I would have boyfriends here and there and trying to reconcile the shame and the guilt of, have I repented enough, you know, to be sort of seen as pure again, or to be in a good relationship with God, you know. But I always knew, though, that that's actually really what I wanted. I still knew that. There was all that shame still of actually, like, I still want that. It's not like I've repented and I feel like that desire's gone away. I knew that desire was still there. And that was the hard thing, because it was like, once you've tasted it, it's like, how can you not have it? Yeah. You know, and it's, especially I think that relationship was quite toxic. So that didn't help with the general toxicity of what happens in toxic relationships with stress hormones, endorphins, all of these chemicals. It's not healthy, but often that's what pulls you back in, because of the ups and downs and the rushes and the, yeah. Mm. But yeah, you know, finished year 12. I was a really good student, sort of did well considering I had a lot of mental health sort of struggles, and I started university in Western Australia. All this going on was back in Western Australia, because we moved to WA when I was 12.
Yeah.
So I did all of my sort of high schooling in WA. And then, yeah, when I turned just under 20, I had this, what the church would call a mighty change of heart. And, because I sort of, before that, stopped going to church for a few years. Sort of at that point, my siblings and my mum had stopped attending church, and I would go here and there. And so before that, you know, I did kind of have a bit of a live normal life, I guess. You know, I'd go out drinking or partying or things like that, whereas normal good Mormon kids wouldn't do. So I did have a taste of life outside that. And then when I was about 19, I would, what we'd call, you know, was, had a huge conversion experience, I guess, where I threw myself into the religion after a heartbreak with a boy.
Mm-hmm.
And that became my purpose. That's what healed my heart. That's what became then my community. My purpose, my belief system, everything. And it was like a 180 flip. You know, I had like multiple piercings in my ears. I was wearing like black punk rock kind of stuff, listening to, you know, like My Chemical Romance and The Used and like Evanescence. And then a month later, I'm listening to like church music in my car and reading the scriptures every day and wearing like blouses, like collared blouses and like knee-length skirts and like spending a lot of time with the missionaries. Yeah, and looking back, it's very cringe. But the church was there for a reason at that time, and it was to bring, I guess, community and purpose when I felt like I was at a bit of a crossroads in my life. But it was at that point that I felt differently about my sexuality and my previous relationship with the girl. It was more like that didn't happen. I don't even want that anymore. That was a huge, big mistake. That was, you know, and I felt like I'd actually repented then because I felt like I didn't even allow myself to have the desire anymore. Whereas before it was like this underlying desire, like she's what I want her kind of thing, and nothing else matters. But after this conversion experience, it was kind of like I just didn't want to have anything to do with her. Everything was just pushed, just stuffed in a box, you know, like painting over a wall and without sanding it back. And then, you know, eventually the paint starts to crack. But that was a long process. It was pushed down for like a decade. Yeah. I moved back to Tasmania then because there's quite a big Mormon community, especially in the Huon Valley, but also in Hobart, in Glenorchy, and even in the Eastern Shore, there's like pockets of Mormons. And at that point, you know, I was 20, preparing to be a missionary, like preparing to serve a mission. And so there's what's called a young single adult group. So after the youth program ends at 18, you're then kind of in the young single adults. So then there's activities for you, there's dances, there's camps, there's community, there's people, you don't have to go out and find friends. You don't have to go out and find community or find social events. It's literally given to you. Right. And that's one of the appeals, I guess, of religion is that here's everything. We've got the answers for you. We've got the community. We've got your friends. We've got your social gatherings. So that became a huge part of my life. Every weekend I was going off to a different church activity or seeing some other, you know, young singles or hanging out or going to dances or, you know, go to Launceston and meet up with the young single adults up in Launceston and have activities as well. And so there's a huge community. Like, and you just feel a huge part of it. And like, it makes you feel good, you know, you're part of something and you've got shared beliefs and shared goals. And the outcome of that is marriage usually, like pretty much in young single adults to couple up to get married.
And
it worked. So I served a mission first, which is a podcast episode in on itself, really, because that's, I already had struggled with poor mental health before then. But before my mission, I was okay. But as a missionary, I then suffered from debilitating anxiety and depression, and I came home early. The pressure, the expectation, the demands, you do is for yourself. You don't have any personal time. You have to be with your companion 24/7. If you're going to a toilet somewhere in public, they literally stand outside the toilet waiting for you. There's no personal boundaries. Everything you have is given to the church and God, pretty much. So you lose everything. And there's also the guilt of not doing enough, you know, passing someone on the street, you know, are you going to see them in heaven in the afterlife and wish you'd talk to them? You know, like there's so much guilt and pressure of being enough. And that became too much for my mental health and I came home early. Which is okay as a woman because there's more pressure on the boys Like, it's not even, for women, it's not really an expectation that you serve a mission. It's kind of like you can if you want to, but for the boys, it's like, no, that's your duty to serve a mission. So I appreciate it's a lot harder for the boys. But, yeah, I came home depressed and anxious and was in a very bad way in terms of that, my capacity to sort of handle things well. And that's when, you know, I met my now ex-husband and we started dating when I was very emotionally unwell, I guess, and vulnerable. And so he became my anchor and sort of what I leaned on. Yeah.
How did you meet him and what was well, what was that relationship like?
Typical Tasmanian. He was actually in my kindergarten class. We've still got this photo of, because at that point it was kinder prep and one.
Yeah.
It's composite classes and we were in the same kindy group. But, yeah, he was a part of the church. You know, he was one of the young single adults that we hung around with. You know, he was at the activities and we sort of would give each other rides to church events and things like that. And so we did form a bit of a connection before I went on my mission. Mm-hmm. And then when I came back, yeah, we started sort of dating officially and that moved very, very quickly as Mormon courtships do. Because there's a huge thing of the law of chastity, which is no sexual relations outside of marriage and then complete fidelity within marriage. And so it's very, very common for Mormon couples to get engaged around the 3-4 month mark of dating. And that wasn't, we weren't the exception to that. So I think by the time we got married, we'd been together 7 months.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, that's pretty quick.
Yep. Very quick. Yeah. And with Mormonism, you're sort of on this, normally in life, right, you hear what's called the relationship escalator. You know, this is the kind of the next step of relationships generally outside of religion, but in religion, in Mormonism, it is even more pressure. I guess the relationship escalator is like, this is the next step. This is what you do. This is your path. This is, you know, you've got to get married in the Mormon temple. And then you're expect, you know, it's a very traditional kind of nuclear family, I guess, where the wife stays home. That's obviously personal choice now that it's out of necessity that's happening, but very traditional values generally. And so that was my life, really. I got married. We ended up being able to buy a house in Glenhuon pretty quickly. And we just sort of worked until I had my first child. So, yeah. And I felt good, like, in terms of where I was. I've had felt a lot of peace and purpose. And it wasn't until maybe, like, after my first daughter was born that I started having dreams about previous life happenings.
Yeah. Okay.
If you know what I mean.
I'm picking up what you're putting down. So how long into the marriage was that?
4 years, maybe. Because by that point, I didn't even identify as bisexual or anything. I was like, no, I'm straight. I'm heterosexual. I thought I was the most virtuous, high and mighty person in the world, because I was like, no, I've been there. You can done it. You can choose. You can choose. I was the worst ally. I was horrible, like, looking back. And you just, it's so hard to explain, but the amount of conditioning, the amount of guilt, fear and shame that goes into that religion to get you to support certain ideas. You think, how can people believe these things? But it's so subtle, happens by degrees over and over and over again. 60% of the messages are good, right? You know, it's love one another, be kind to your neighbor, be a good citizen, you know, forgive each other, you know, and then there's the other stuff. There's the really, really subtle things that only over time do you see kind of building up as conditioning.
But you weren't aware of that at that point, though.
Oh, no, it's only in hindsight, only ever in hindsight. Because no one ever joins a cult. People only leave them.
Absolutely.
No one willingly joins a cult. And the church is very culty, Mormonism, very, very culty, in terms of you can't criticize leadership. There's a lot of rules and regulations, a lot of weird stuff, like, you know, Jess calls it the magic underwear. So at that point, I was like, no, you can choose. Being gay is a choice, because I've chosen to be straight. And I had the experience. I've been with a girl. Like, I was like the perfect kind of poster child, I guess, for conversion and how Jesus can change you and, you know, all of this stuff that I just put myself on this sort of pedestal of like, yeah, I'm heterosexual, see? Anyone can do it.
But was that all internal, the pedestal and the conversations? That wasn't something you told people about, or?
Oh, no, that was hugely internal. Yeah. So the amount of censorship that I did in myself having conversations with people, like, you know, talking about first boyfriends or first loves, I would change the pronouns.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of saying her, I would say he.
Yeah.
There was a lot of hiding. You can't be yourself, really, in that kind of setting. There's no room for authenticity, or because the amount of shame I still carried around from that relationship, even though I thought I repented, I'd been forgiven, it was still that thing of you can't talk about it, because if I talk about it, then it might bring up things, it might stir things. I just better leave it.
So then you got to the point where you started having these dreams of previous lives. What did you do with that?
Oh, my goodness. I remember the first one. It shook me. I was like, it shook me. So I woke up feeling still in love with her. Like, that dream was so vivid. And it's not like I was even thinking about, well, I thought about her a lot, really, like looking back, but I didn't do anything with it. It was just like, think about it and then kind of nothing happens. But then I started these dreams where there was that emotional connection was still there. They were never physical. It was always the emotional connection or the chemistry or the pull or the desire. Whenever she sort of popped up in those dreams. And then the first one, yeah, I woke up going, like, I actually felt like I was still in love with her. And then it was, whew, it was a thing of trying to deal with that and get over one dream, like, for months.
Mm.
You know, it brought up a lot of stuff. It brought up the desires that I'd never, haven't felt for years, that I pushed down, that, like, why am I feeling this? I thought I was done with this. Like, I'm married, happily married. Like, you know, this is my life. But, you know, the body wants what it wants and it doesn't forget. Yeah.
So how long did you wrestle with that before talking to someone about it, or?
I think, so I prayed a lot about it, and I actually got quite a really nice personal, what you call a revelation. Even I would still say it is a revelation, because it's something that, an insight that I got into that experience through prayer. Religious people would say it came from God, but now, you know, you kind of reworded things and it definitely was an insight. I, at the point, felt like I got an answer from God saying that, how can that love be bad? Because there's a saying in the church that charity never faileth. Like, you know, charity, we say, is love, like charitable love.
Mm-hmm.
Loving that love turned into more of a, like, a just a pure, unconditional love for an individual person, rather than being lustful or forbidden or all this stuff. That's kind of how I made sense of it at the time. And it felt okay that I have this love for this person. Love can just be love. And yeah, that's how I sort of shifted it then. And then it would be pushed down for another couple of years. And then the second lot of dreams started. And it was this cycle of every few years the dreams would start. And I think the second cycle I saw a therapist about it and tried to sort of reconcile what was going on. Didn't really help much. at the time. Maybe I didn't get the right therapist for myself, or maybe the religion was still too, you know, heavily played on things at that point. No, it was just a matter of pushing it down, coming up again, pushing it down. Not even being able to listen to Missy Higgins because she would trigger certain things, right? It was about knowing what would trigger certain feelings and then not doing them because I didn't want to have those feelings stirred up. And then I guess it was when my ex-husband and I started couples therapy and she had a lot of training in like sexual health and sexual problems, or she was very open sexually, I guess I'm saying. And she was, one of the first questions was like, how do you both identify? You know, I was like, oh, well, I'm heterosexual. She'd already had our previous life history. And she's like, hang on, haven't you been with, didn't you say that, you know, when you were 16, you were with a girl? I'm like, yeah. But now that I identify as heterosexual, she's like, well, you're either attracted to women or you're not. Like, what a novel idea, right? And so she's like, well, you can't choose. Like, you're either, if you're attracted to women, you're attracted to women. And if you're attracted to women, then you're not heterosexual. I was like, okay. And that really made me think, like, how, thinking about it now, like, how dumb, but it really made me think, like, yeah, okay. And then at that point I did start taking on that identity of bisexual in marriage still, like 5 years in, I think. It was a nearly 11-year marriage. And that became nice, I guess, to kind of own it a bit more and go, well, I can be a married woman married to a man and own these feelings, own them and sort of not try to hide it. I still didn't talk about it to church friends or anything. It was more of a personal identity that made me feel sort of better about myself, my situation, that I didn't really have to deny that existed anymore. And then the marriage broke down independent of my sexuality struggles. But in that year that it did break down, I did go to a therapist, another different therapist, and be like, it's getting stronger. I don't know how to reconcile this anymore. Like, it was becoming persistent, like more than it ever had before. But not just a thing of like it comes in waves and things. It was, I'm not sure if you can explain this to people who haven't gone through these kind of struggles before, that the yearning, it's not just something you might like. It's this innate, who you are as a person knows what it needs and wants, and I wasn't getting it. And it was a grief process of knowing that I was probably never going to have it because of Mormonism and the church, that marriage is forever, and that once you've made this choice, you know, that's it. You're kind of with this person forever, and that's your life. And so there was a grief process of letting go, trying to let go of ever having the possibility of being with a woman.
Well, that didn't work.
No. Aren't I grateful? Oh, my goodness. It's that perspective that makes me, I think now, so bloody grateful every day, where I am and who I've got and just, yeah, where I am in life, I guess. Because, I did go back to a therapist at that point and go like, yeah, I don't know how to deal with this. It's getting stronger, more persistent. And I thought she was very good with what she did. She sort of said, right, let's just put that part to the side for now. That's always going to be there, right? That's always going to be there. Let's look at the marriage. What's going on in the marriage? How's the marriage? And, yeah, the marriage was terrible. It wasn't great, right? And so we sort of worked on that issue first of what I actually wanted in the marriage, and then we looked at the sexuality thing. And it was a year process of losing my faith in the religion first. That happened first over years, I guess, many years of degrees deconstructing, and then being able to be in a place of like, my personal values don't actually align with the church's personal values, and sort of being brave enough to step back. And then that's really where the marriage started to break down a lot, because the only way I can describe it to so people might understand, it's like if two vegans get together, right, and veganism is your whole lifestyle. It's a part of your innate values. It's how you see, it's the lens with what you see the world, right? And then one of you starts eating meat in your house, and you the values aren't the same anymore.
Yeah.
How do you reconcile that when your foundation of your marriage was veganism? That's what it was like being in a mixed faith religion with how devout Mormonism like can be when you're in it. It's not just a church, it's a whole lifestyle. Mm. And so that was really, really difficult for the marriage. Just little things of me drinking coffee. Because Mormons don't drink coffee. No, tea or coffee.
I knew Mormonism wasn't for me.
And so we really struggled to reconcile the rapid changes that were happening with me, I guess. And I wouldn't want to put that on anyone. It's very, very difficult for anyone to try and navigate the rapid changes going on, like with someone that you love that you've been with for 10 years and you're seeing all these changes. And you might kind of think, oh, you grow and evolve together. But when you're in that system of, no, this is what's right and wrong, and this is our destiny as a married couple, and all these changes come in, it was really difficult for my ex-husband to sort of cope with and to absorb those changes, I guess. From day dot, he knew about my history.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, okay with it. He was never threatened by it or had an issue with it. Until it threatened the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Until it became real. Yeah.
You separated and you came out? Was there a coming out process?
I guess it was more of I just started living. I just started doing things that I didn't really have specific conversations. I think I might have had with Mum when I was still married, just about talking about, you know, how I'm realize I'm still bisexual, and even I still this girl from when I was 16 still had a hold on me and all this kind of stuff. So she was aware. And I think when I was talking to Mum and Dad during the separation, she did ask, you know, would I start dating women? I said, yes, most definitely. Because at that point, with the church out of the way, the belief system totally just crumbling because of literally like the internet now, you know, you can do Google searches and everything comes falling down.
Yes.
Very, very like a house of cards.
Yes.
There was no sort of barrier at all, and it became quite exciting to think about the possibility of like, can this actually happen? Like, you see, like, seriously, I might actually be able to date a woman. Like, and just that prospect was very exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'd grieved the marriage, I guess. I think it's quite typical with women generally, they say that you grieve the marriage before it's even over. And by the time it was over for me. Same can't be said for my ex-husband. He's really, really struggled. But at that point, I was really ready just to sort of move ahead and start the next sort of phase of my life, I guess.
What did that look like?
Oh, it was messy because messy but exciting, fun, heartbreaking, processing trauma, all of this stuff at once. So there was leaving the religion, sort of coming out and going through a separation divorce, like was all happening at the same time.
Well, parenting.
And parenting, three kids. Yeah. So, I mean, even one of those things by itself, it's a huge thing. Like leaving a religion like Mormonism, you don't just leave the church, you leave friends, a community, a support group, social circles, a belief system, there's so much that just comes with that in itself. And then I didn't have any friends, like authentic friends, really. Mm. Like I didn't know any queer people. I didn't have people to take me to queer events or, you know, so I just got on the apps, I guess, and had my first experience not knowing anyone, like not even being able to have a sounding board of like, I'm talking to this woman and this is what's happening, mm-hmm. share it, not even like really share it with anyone. It was quite isolating. It's still mm-hmm. exciting, but it took a long time to build community and friends and find, yeah, people, find your people, you know. I just thought mm-hmm. I'm the only queer person in the Huon Valley. Didn't know anything existed. I thought there's got to be stuff. And I had one friend, an older friend who's my mum's sort of age. She was like, there's got to be people, Lauren. Like, you've got to find your community. They're out there. Your people are out there. I said, where? I don't know. Like, I didn't know any groups. I didn't know working it out. I didn't know any of the queer women groups. But now, like, once you start getting your foot in, it all just opens up, which it did very nicely. And there was a very, very nice sweet spot where, you know, when I was single, had wonderful community, really good friends, lots of social outings and gatherings, you know, I was on the dating apps and, but yeah, it took a while for things to settle, especially like starting therapy as well. Things start to stir up and you process a lot of shit from 10 years of a mm-hmm. marriage where there wasn't any trust and lots of, you know, horrible things happened and also at the same time processing the religious trauma that you didn't even know you had mm. until hindsight, going, yeah, that was really wrong. That shouldn't have happened. Mm. Yeah. So it was lots of things at once.
My name's Jess Yasuda and I identify as a lesbian, but that also wasn't always the way for me either. That's been something that's been pretty new in the last 18 months, really. After I met Lauren.
Pretty recent.
Didn't realise I was a lesbian until after Lauren and I got together.
All right.
So I grew up really close to here on the Eastern Shore. Typical two-parent, two-kid household. Really happy childhood. There was a lot of family conflict. My parents didn't get on well at all. And my mum had some mental health issues. But, like, overall I would say I had a really normal, happy 90s childhood, like good group of friends, lots of freedom to sort of go out and ride our bikes all day and really good memories. I have a younger sister. We have never got on super well. We just haven't. We've just got different personalities. So there was a lot of squabbling and bickering when we were kids and probably still a fair bit of squabbling and bickering now that we're adults. Yeah. Yeah.
It tends to keep going.
Yeah. But I did have a best friend who lived right across the road and she's still one of my best friends now and had a, you know, great group of friends who I still see lots of them regularly. I had grandparents that were from Germany and we would spend every Saturday at their house. My granddad would come and pick me up on Saturday mornings and my sister and we'd spend the day there and I have so many fond memories of being at their house. My grandma was a wonderful cook and she used to always take the time to sort of stop and play with us, which was really nice. And then my other grandparents lived in Launceston, but again, I have great memories. They had like a little mini sort of hobby farm and my cousins who lived up there, so there was two girl cousins, me and my sister, so there were four of us girls and we'd go stay at my grandparents' little farm for 2 weeks every school holidays and lots of good memories like tractor rides and riding around in the back of the ute, which was like highly illegal and super dangerous. Yeah. And yeah. So I think I had a really normal 90s childhood.
Were you aware of queerness as you were growing up?
No. So thinking about it, I remember Ellen on TV when she came out as a lesbian, everyone was talking about that. Mm-hmm. And I remember my grandfather, the one in Launceston, was super homophobic and used to say really horrible things about gay men a lot. But that is literally it. I don't think we were really exposed to queer people at all. I mean, I knew what gay was and I knew what lesbian was. I had no idea that there was all those other letters, you know, bisexual or just nothing like that at all. Yeah. I do remember at Salamanca, going to Salamanca Market and they had the, you know, we should legalise being gay. Like, yeah, it should be legal.
Decriminalise it.
Decriminalise it, yeah. And my grandfather, that's probably what prompted a lot of his comments about, no, that it shouldn't make it legal, blah, blah, blah.
Were you a tomboyish at all?
No. Super girly girl. Really couldn't wait for Dolly magazine to come out every month. My best friend and I wanted to be supermodels. Like, we really thought we were going to be supermodels. We just loved hair and makeup. Yeah, totally not at all a tomboy. So high school, I would say, is where I started thinking about things a little bit more. I went to an all-girls high school and everyone would say, oh, you go there? Is it full of lesbians? It was just if you go there, you're going to turn out to be a lesbian. And lesbian was like the worst thing you could possibly be. And it was a lot of like whispering going, she might be a lesbian, you know. Oh, don't get too close. She's probably a lesbian. So that was when I think I started thinking that maybe I was attracted to women. But I was also like super, had heaps of crushes on famous celebrities. And I read Dolly magazine and I was like really into like, you know, the how to get boys to like you, and I really like the Backstreet Boys and all of that sort of thing.
We all
do. my 13-year-old son loves the Backstreet Boys, actually. But in high school was when I was in grade 8 and I just was watching house drama performances, and there was this girl who must have been in grade 9 or 10, and I just went, oh, my God. Oh, wow, I, like, just feel so attracted to her. I have, like, I just instantly had this massive, massive crush on her. And every time I'd walk past her for, like, the rest of high school, I'd just be like, oh. That's when I kind of thought, I really don't know if I'm a lesbian or if I'm just normal, you know? Mm. And I was like, those are the two options. Maybe I'm a lesbian? No, I don't think I am. I really like boys as well. No, I think I'm just straight. And that's kind of when I started thinking about it a little bit more. But at that time, the only lesbian was KD Lang and Ellen. And I was like, no, I don't want to have, that's not me. I don't want to have short hair. Like, I like makeup and I like wearing dresses. So I guess it was sort of like a little bit of a, I don't know if it really bothered me, but it was definitely something that I thought about, but I didn't really share with anyone, I think. And I remember my mum had said to me, look, you might find that you have crushes on girls and that doesn't mean you're a lesbian. Don't even think about it. It's fine. Like, it can be a normal part of growing up. So I think I kind of thought maybe it's just, that's just how it is.
A phase.
Yeah. And looking back, I'm like, no, like, there's actually so many signs that I probably just didn't take notice of and I didn't think about. So that was high school. And then after I left high school, I sort of had a lot of boyfriends. I sort of went through phases where I would sort of have a boyfriend for like a year and a half and then we'd break up, and then I'd have another boyfriend for like a year and a half and then we broke up and I had another boyfriend for 2 years. So sort of like was always in relationships with men, and I didn't have any opportunity to explore with women at all. But after I broke up with the last boyfriend, after I broke up with Ben, there was this British backpacker who was like part of our circle of friends. She'd just come over from England with her boyfriend, and I just fell in love with her. I think at that point I was like, oh, I'm bisexual. I knew about what bisexual was, and I was like, I like men and I like women. And I had the biggest crush on her. She would come around and watch movies with me, and I'd sort of flirt with her and maybe put my hand on her leg a little bit and just be really, really sort of overly friendly. And she just didn't pick up on it at all. And I told my friends, I said to my friends, like, I've got this huge crush on someone, but you're going to be really surprised when you find out who it is. And they're like, oh, who is it? Who is it? And I was like, oh, it's this girl. And they're like, oh, that's great. You should go for it. I think she'd be, you know, she totally could be into you. You should definitely talk to her about it. So that was so nice that my friends were just like so supportive, wasn't a big deal. They weren't horrified. They weren't like, oh, my God, what do you mean? You've got a crush on a girl. And I did tell this girl, we were watching a movie at my house, and I said to her, I said, look, I've got to tell you something. Like, I really like you. And she's like, I really like you too, Jess. And I was like, no, I really like you. And she was like, oh, no, 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 no. And then I'm going home. And I just, I've never seen her since. So that's a bit sad.
And how old were you when that was, when that happened?
19 or 20. Yeah, 19, I think. And then like 6 months later, I met the man who I ended up marrying. So I just never really got an opportunity to explore that. I think I always knew it was there. And sometimes I would feel this like desire. I remember being out at a nightclub on my 18th birthday and there was this girl who was dancing with me and I'm sure she was flirting with me. And I remember being like, oh, if I didn't have a boyfriend, I'd see where this was going to go. But just I never got that opportunity. And it wasn't like it is now where you can say I'm really interested in having an experience and get on an app and find someone else who's interested. To find someone else who was like, I like girls too, would have been much trickier, I think, back then.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. So you kind of accepted you were bisexual pretty early.
Mm. It's one of those things. Like, I really absorbed that culture, that comp het kind of culture, and I really wanted boys to like me. I think I used to read a lot of, like, Cosmopolitan magazine and stuff that was all, like, how to be good in bed, how to give a good blowjob, how to make boys like you. And I just really internalized that. I just really, really think I absorbed that message that if guys like you, you have more worth. I don't know why. I don't know if it obviously didn't affect everyone that way, but I think for me it did. So I really just wanted that validation, I think. And one of those relationships was quite toxic and horrible, with a man who was really angry and had a lot of alcohol issues. And I think after I left that, I was really, really heartbroken. And so I just sort of jumped into something else quite quickly. And it was just kind of like the popular culture, like to have a boyfriend, you know?
You met your now ex-husband?
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Yeah, so I was sort of single for about a year before I met him. Mm-hmm. So it feels like everyone, being so Tasmanian, like I knew him through other people that I knew, through my group of friends. Mm-hmm. It's how everyone must have met their ex-husbands, I feel like, through people that they knew. He was just, he seemed, I used to hang out with a lot of people who smoked a lot of pot and didn't have jobs and didn't have cars. And then he came along and he knew all those people, but he had a really good job and he had a nice brand new car and he seemed very like he had his shit together. And yeah, he was great in the beginning. We had a really good first couple of years. He moved in with me pretty soon after we got together. And yeah, we ended up getting married after 3 years. So I got married when I was 24.
Okay.
And I was pregnant and we bought a house. So like all of a sudden we went from sort of having this fun kind of lifestyle with a lot of like going out partying on weekends and taking drugs and things like that to then we just had to be serious and settle down and have a family.
Real quick.
Real quick. Yeah. Yeah. It didn't feel like it was quick to me though. It felt like I'm 24, why aren't I married yet? I really want to get married. I really want to have babies. I really want to be a traditional housewife. I just really had this sort of idea of what my life was going to be like. I really liked that he had a good job so I wouldn't have to work. Yeah. And it just didn't work out like that at all, like at all. We were married for, I think, around 12 years. We had a lot of issues right from when we got married and had a baby. Things just kind of fell apart. I sort of don't want to share too many details about him and what he was going through, but he had a lot of issues with addiction. And then about 5 years, and so we had problems and we had marriage counselling twice. And at that point I used to think, well, you know, there is this side of me that would really like to explore what it's like to be with a woman. But, like, that's okay. It probably won't happen. It's fine. Looking back, I think, gosh, you did used to think about women quite a lot, you know. And then about 5 years into the marriage, things went really bad. He injured his shoulder at work and he lost his job and he developed chronic pain, fibromyalgia, which is really debilitating and crippling, and it really changed the way he interacted with us, and it exacerbated a lot of problems that were already there. And I started a business, and it just, the next 5 years were really awful, and the marriage should have ended a lot earlier than it did. But when I ended it, it had nothing to do with my sexuality at all. That was not, that was something that I thought about a fair bit while I was married, but it wasn't at all anything to do with the reason why the marriage ended. Yeah. And I kind of thought there was a lot of trauma bonding in the marriage. So I honestly thought that he was my soulmate and I'd never find anyone that I loved as much as him ever again. And I was just going to get a lot more cats and drink a lot more wine, and it's just going to be me and the kids forever. And I was okay with that. You know, I grieved the marriage and I was sad, but I knew it had to end. And I just never expected that things would have ended up the way they did. Just never thought that was going to happen.
So after he moved out and you had a bit of freedom, what did that look like?
Oh, I really went a little bit crazy. So it's been a long time having no validation, like the opposite of whatever validation is, really.
And abuse.
I felt really shit about myself. I felt really awful. And he moved on very, very quickly. He literally moved out of this house into his new girlfriend's house, which was a, it kind of stung a little bit. So I just had this sort of like this experience where I was just feeling so joyful every day. To be free of the marriage. I wasn't expecting that, but like I was literally just walking around like almost high as a kite all day, just going, this is brilliant. Look, I've just got this, I can do what I want. You know, if I like, I don't have to worry about if I've left the dishwasher door open, like it's fine. This is me and the kids. We're just going to be so happy. And I was like, I'm never having a relationship again, but I am going to have a lot of casual fun. I said, the kids will never meet a partner of mine. It's going to be me and the kids as our little unit, and I'm just going to have these sort of like relationships with people that they're not going to, the kids aren't going to know about it. I'm just going to have casual fun, and it's going to be just, that's how I want to live the rest of my life, like that. And I've had a good go at that. Like I got on Tinder, and the first thing they ask is like, are you interested in men or women? And I said both, and I was like, this is going to be so fun. I'm finally going to get to sleep with women. Oh, I can't wait. This is going to be great. Because Lauren talked about having that longing feeling of like, oh no, I'm never going to get to experience that. And I had never experienced it, so I didn't know what it was that I was grieving. But I did used to have that feeling of like, you're going to probably go the rest of your life and never know what that's like. And that it's like a longing. It is like a just almost a deep, almost a grief kind of thing, that there's a whole side of you that you're not going to get to explore. And straight away I matched with this girl who I'd actually almost hooked up with when I was 16 years old. And I sent her a message and I said, do you know that turning down that threesome with you and your boyfriend was like one of the biggest regrets of my life? And she's like, oh, really? That's hilarious. Why don't we have a date? Why don't we have a glass of wine together? And I was like, this is it. This is great. My life's going to be so good now. But no, I didn't end up meeting any women really until almost I'd been on the apps for about a year. I had a lot of experiences with guys. I got my heart broken. I got too involved with people too quickly because I think I was really just searching for, I was just so happy to have someone be nice to me, you know?
Yeah.
I was just like, wow, this guy's being nice to me. He's got to be like, there's no other guys like that. There's no other guys that are as beautiful as this man kind of thing. I had some really fun experiences and I had some really just not good experiences too, not traumatic in any way, but just like really disappointing experiences. And then I sort of went through this phase almost a year after my ex-husband had moved out, when I'd been doing this for, it was almost a year, and it was like this 6 week period where I just felt like I'd reached a level of self-development or something where I was sort of, I was just going through like this period where I was ending things that weren't serving me anymore, and I was really good at recognizing red flags in people and just being like, no, this isn't for me. And I was just tapping out of conflict and just being like, I'm not participating in this. And I just kind of thought to myself, I'm actually ready for a relationship now. I didn't think this was going to happen, but I actually want to have a relationship with someone. And so I'd had about a month off. This whole time I'd had some time off the apps. It wasn't making me happy anymore. It just wasn't giving me any joy. It felt like a chore. I felt like I was going on all these dates with people and there was like no chemistry with most of them. And so I'd had some time off and then I was like, right, I'm ready for a relationship. And I rewrote my Tinder profile and I actually put in some information about myself. And I said, I'm not looking for something really serious really quickly, but I'm also not looking for casual fun. And I went on 3 dates with women who were all called Lauren, which is hilarious. and Lauren was the 3rd one. And
but at that point you'd stopped searching for men though on Tinder, right?
Yes. Yeah, when I said I want a relationship, I when I got on Tinder, I put on men and women. Yep. And then I started matching with men or seeing men and I was like, no, I just don't want to do this. I don't want to match with men. I don't want to have any more dates with men. I don't think I want a relationship with men. I really want to put all my energy now into meeting women. So I changed it to women like the next day or something like that. And then matched with Lauren like less than a week later, I reckon. So I thought, oh, I must be bisexual. But then I also thought, if I haven't been with a woman, how do I know if I'm bisexual? Maybe I wouldn't like it. Maybe it's not for me. How can you call yourself bi if you haven't got any experience? Which now, looking back, I'm like, that's so ridiculous because straight people don't do that, do they?
No.
But, yeah, I was very comfortable saying to people I'm bi. Like when I first got on Tinder and I said to my friends, oh, I've put men and women, my sister said, oh, you're going to tell Dad you're a lesbian? And I said, I'm not a lesbian. I'm just on the spectrum. It's all on a spectrum, isn't it? You know, I'm just open to everyone kind of thing.
Yeah.
And actually when I headed off to my date with Lauren, my sister was driving me to pick up my car and she's like, oh, so you're going on a date with a woman, are you? What are you? Are you bisexual? Are you a lesbian? What is it? Who do you want to meet? Like, do you want to meet a man or a woman? And I said, well, I think I'd like to meet a woman, but I don't think I'm a lesbian. I'm just on the spectrum somewhere. She seemed quite concerned with how I wanted to label myself. Yeah.
So you met on Tinder?
Met on Tinder, yep.
Yep.
Terrible first date.
Oh, it wasn't terrible. It was mediocre.
It was okay.
It was okay.
It definitely wasn't me at my best, though.
But at that point, though, I'd really lowered my expectations of first dates. Like, I'd had a lot of bad experiences, too. I took a break from dating as well. And like Jess said, I really went through a similar journey of self-development and recognising red flags, recognising green flags, knowing what I wanted and what I didn't want anymore. Like, you go through that thing. And for me, it was that thing of, right, lower expectations of first date. All I need to know on a first date is if I want to see them again. That's it.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that made it very easy because it wasn't, it was an okay date. But for me, that's all it needed to be. And then the next few dates, then you have the conversations. Then you'd see if your values are aligned or if there's compatibility. And because I think I had experiences where I'd not qualified people early enough. And you just run on chemistry early on and, like, the first date, it's like, oh, this is the one, blah, 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 you know, whereas, like, no, you really have to tone it down, you know, cut it all back to real basics. Do you just want to see the person again?
Mm.
Yes or no?
Yeah.
And, yeah, we did.
You nearly didn't, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was super hungover, really hungover. Couldn't think of anything to say, which is hilarious because I'd been on, like, 50 dates that year, I reckon. I had a good repertoire of questions to bring out, but I just couldn't think of anything. And I just sort of thought, oh, I probably just won't see each other again. But then Lauren had mentioned that she used to be a Mormon, and I found that fascinating because I'm really, like, fascinated by cults and the whole sort of, I just thought that was really interesting. And I was driving home and I sort of thought, you know what, like, she was super hot and she's got a really interesting story. Why don't we just have another date and see what happened? So I sent her a message and said, like,
you actually told me you thought I was super hot. So that was nice. Yeah. In the message, which was unexpected. Because it was that thing of, like, you know, it was I wasn't expecting fireworks on the first date. At that point, I'd, you know, like, it's fine. But it was that thing of you could take it or leave it. You know, if she said yes, great. If she said no, there's no, you know, you don't put your risk where there's really high risk of getting your heart broken on the first date. So so I was surprised when I got that message. I'm like, yeah, next date, great.
So it was the second date.
I wouldn't say fireworks.
I felt very attracted to you. I thought you were super attractive and I was quite, this is the furthest I'd ever gotten with a woman, like 2 dates. So I was actually quite excited.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say I was like overcome with like just, you know, suddenly obsessed with you. Yeah. But it was really interesting to me because I had been dating men who, I don't know, just different. And then Lauren on the second date's like, what's your attachment style? I was like, wow, this is cool. Like we're actually having proper conversations about what sort of, what we're looking for and what kind of relationship, you know, ideally.
Personal values and things. So like at that point on paper, Jess was ticking all the green flags. I say on paper because at that point I was doing things differently. That earlier that year, like, or even like late the year before, I had a, you know, negative experience dating a woman where I'd sort of put everything in too early, attach myself to her way too early without actually qualifying her at all to see if, you know, there was a potential of, you know, a relationship or anything. You know, and I was also in therapy and things, so I was learning a lot and doing things differently, and I guess I had more walls up to protect myself from that happening again. Because heartbreak is horrible, and I don't think I was put too many walls up. I put walls up to protect myself from falling for Jess or falling for someone without knowing if there was going to be like reciprocated intentions, I guess.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the second date was fine. You know, I think it took a little while for me for sort of to catch feelings for Jess, I guess. But that's what I wanted. That's what I was looking for. I didn't want – I'd done the alternative and it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wanted something to sort of form organically but also intentionally, you know. Yeah, and it did. It was really, really nice. Just it just how it evolved, just – the conversations, you know, one date after the next. It was really lovely. Yeah.
It was the third date where I think things got a bit more exciting.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Traditionally it's the third, I
think. Oh, yeah. I sort of said
we're
like.
We're very aware of that though.
Yeah. You know, I was like, so how about we have dinner at your place kind of thing. I was like, going to make sure it's somewhere where, you know.
Yeah.
There can be some action.
And yeah, because Jess said that, I was like, fuck, like, is it going to happen? Is it not going to happen? Like, I didn't want to have all these things you do just because it's what you're supposed to do. I didn't want to do that. But I was like, she's coming here. She's like invited herself to my house. Something's going to happen probably. But like, we hadn't even had a first kiss yet or anything by that point. But yeah, even just at dinner, like I just saw Jess differently in a different light. There was something growing there. We had some fun. Yeah, so we have a non-traditional, I don't even know what's traditional anymore, because so many people can define, make their own rules for relationships now, which is beautiful. So we don't live together. We live an hour apart and we have 6 kids between us. So how Jess described before, about this is her house with her kids and her life, and that's then me. I have the same. We pretty much have, we're living our lives parallel to each other, I guess, and then we come together on our weekends off and we talk on the phone and we, you know, have times where we meet up with all the kids on school holidays and, you know, share weekends together and things.
Yeah, it works really well. Like my kids love Lauren. They were fine with me dating a woman. They couldn't care less. Like, no one even batted an eyelid. Like, I wouldn't say I came out to anyone. I just said I'm dating a girl. And some people were a little bit surprised. The lady who, my employee, she's an older lady. She was like, oh, oh, okay. But most people were completely fine with it. I do have religious auntie and uncle who just have never asked me about Lauren. They just don't mention it. Mm-hmm. But apart from that, and my mum did have some really hurtful things to say, but I think she was very surprised. And I think you maybe just give people a little bit of grace when they're adjusting to something that's a surprise, because she thought I was dating men. But overall, it's just been, like, completely fine. Like, no one – Lauren's just fitted into my life, and the kids love her, and I really like spending time with her kids. It's just – it works really well. But we have no intention of moving in together. We think that a lot of what works so well is that we have time to miss each other, and we don't have to figure out how to parent each other's children or –
just adds so much stress to a relationship. I think it's not necessarily needed. Like, we're very, very happy with, you know, something that Jess put on, even on her Tinder profile, I think was very happy being independent, loves her independence. You know, and I've become very used to just being a one adult household of doing things the way that you want to do them. And it's not about not being able to compromise, but I think it's just knowing what works individually for each of us. Maybe one day when we're retired and don't have any kids in the house, but still, Jess has no intention of moving from the Eastern Shore, and I don't have any intention from moving out of Huon Valley. So,
not sure how that's going to happen. Yeah. It was only after Lauren and I got together that I sort of realised how love is meant to be and how sex is meant to be. And I realised that I'm a lesbian. Like, I don't think I was ever really attracted to men the same way that I'm attracted to Lauren and attracted to women. Like, there's something different there. And I found it quite, unsettling. The first few months that we were together, there was sort of, like, this voice in my head going, this is right, this is right, this is how it's meant to be. And I found it unsettling that as someone who thought I knew myself really well, that you can be a lesbian and not realise till you're 36. And, like, I wasn't even sure if I was bisexual before we got together. So that was a bit of a journey. Yeah, I just feel so unbelievably happy. I didn't realise that I was being inauthentic with myself until I can be authentic. And now that feels really joyful.
Yeah. And do you have a queer community around you now?
Yeah, we do. We go to, like, a little queer women's meetup called Twist of Lemons at Boodle Beasley in North Hobart once a month. And Lauren has some queer friends. Most of my friends are pretty straight or reasonably towards the straight end of the spectrum. So mostly I've met queer people through Lauren.
Yeah, same, because, like, I had to pretty much start from scratch. Like, I've still got people that I keep in touch with from church who I think are still quality people to have in my life, you know. I think you go through the journey of being able to sort of choose that rather than just having a designated community. You know, and just because I left the church and stuff, it doesn't mean that I just 100% cut off everything and everyone. There's still aspects of that community that I love and that are always going to be a part of me. So there's going to be people that are in that as well that I still sort of want in my life. But I do notice the difference of having queer friends. Just the feeling in your body, that I just call it ease. It's just ease in your body for me being around queer people. Doesn't matter what kind of queer people, any queer people. It's like there's no need to translate any language. Sometimes when I've been around, and I don't think it's just the straight factor, it's probably the religious factor. You kind of feel like you do have to speak another language, or you're trying to translate a different language. Whereas when you're around queer people, you can just, like, talk in your native tongue, I guess, and it feels natural and easy, and there's no having to translate different things. Or I think there's that sort of similar experiences of, no matter if, you know, like us, we're married to men, or someone who's known they're gay their whole life, you still share similar struggles and experiences, and you see the world generally through a more similar lens than people who
extra. You said on the third date, you said, oh, I just really much prefer hanging out with queer people because they're so much more fun. And I said, I think it's just you've been hanging out with Mormons because my friends are really fun. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, honestly, I didn't have any other sort of experience of like straight people. They were always religious straight people, really. Mm. Or apart from people I worked with, you know. Mm. Yeah, but remember that year or that 2 years I was single and I'd found Twist of Lemons, I'd found best friends, I'd found community. They were just like tears of joy often of just, this is my life. Mm. You know, it was just incredible to be. And also because the church gatekeeps joy, they think that anyone outside the church or anyone outside the influence of like Jesus Christ's grace can't feel true joy. You can feel a number of emotions, but joy is reserved for the faithful. So being able to experience those feelings outside of a religious context, it's just amazing. It just feels absolutely incredible. Yeah, and sort of settling into life now is, you know, where it was all really new before and having all these new experiences all the time, you know, things have, I guess, settled a bit, but we still really love going to queer events. And well, Jess just had her first Pride this year, Taz Pride, you know, so there's still new things happening. Mm. Yeah, it just feels easy.
I would say to someone who maybe thinks that they have this part of them that is attracted to same-sex people, but they just think maybe it's a part that they would like to explore, but maybe life's just going to be fine if you just don't get to explore it. Like when you're young, don't leave it till you're 36. Just, yeah, I feel like there's probably a lot of women who identify as bisexual. There's definitely lots of bisexual women. There's definitely lots and lots of people who are bisexual. But then I also think there's a lot of women who maybe have got that real solid comp het wanting validation, wanting men to like them, who for that reason aren't fully allowing themselves to explore that maybe they just really like women. So I'd just say just go for it. Just do it.
I guess mine's a little bit different. I think I would come at it as if I could do things differently. And it's not about doing things differently. I think it's about giving yourself compassion for the capacity that you had at a certain time in your life. So if, you know, you are in a similar situation like we were, or someone in their 30s or 40s or later that are going like, why did I do this when I was young, or why didn't I do that? Or we do what we can with what we have, and it's never too late to change who you are. It's never too late to be the person who you were born to be. And the longer I've kind of come on this journey of coming out, I know this sounds silly, but it's like I just get gayer and I just love it even more, like, you know.
Yeah.
Do you keep getting gayer?
And I just feel like I was born to be gay, in terms of it just feels so easy and natural and like ease. There's so much ease just living the way you're supposed to live. And I think maybe for some older people there can be a bit of shame or a bit of regret perhaps of not doing things a certain way when they were younger. But, yeah, self-compassion I think is huge to sort of.
That's a good balance to what I said. I think that's kind of the flip of it, isn't it? Mm. I think it's good.
Mm. Brilliant. Mm. Thank you both for being so open. And
no, thank you.
No, thank you for taking the time. Like, yeah.
My pleasure.
If this episode has raised any issues for you, please take some time to reflect and ensure you reach out for support if you need it. If you are listening in Tasmania, you can contact Working It Out via their website or calling 6231 1200 during business hours. If you need immediate mental health support, please contact Lifeline on 131114 or Beyond Blue on 1300 224636. Both services are available 24/7. If you would like to get in touch or share your story on this podcast, please send us an email at nwpride@outlook.com. This podcast is produced by Northwest Pride, a community group based across the north, northwest and west coast of Tasmania. They host events and social inclusion opportunities for anyone who is a part of the LGBTIAQ+ community, their friends and allies. This podcast is made possible by the support of Working It Out. You can hear future episodes and all of our past episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Please follow, rate, and review if you can. It does help us to reach more folks who might enjoy or benefit from hearing these amazing life stories. We'll be back soon. Take care of yourself and each other.